Hi, good morning. I'm Daniel Webster. I'm with Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research. Today I'm going to talk to you about a new study that we've just completed looking at the association between state gun laws and the rate at which guns get exported to criminals in other states, including Mexico. There's my disclosure, no relationships to disclose. So, how do criminals get their guns? I wish I knew. I mean, that's just the blunt honesty. So, you can ask criminals. So, we have surveys of state prisoners, for example, even a national representative sample, and ask them, how did you get the gun that you used in your crime? And they'll tell you. Most common way is they say they got it from family or friends or some type of associates. Almost a third say they got it from the street, a drug dealer, some sort of black market or fence. And then only 10% say I went up to a retail store and purchased it there. It's these kind of data that a lot of people look at and say, they just throw up their hands and say, well, how in the world are we going to control that kind of market? This is the way criminals get their guns. What laws can help us look at this? But I think that this misses a very important point, and that is, how do guns first get diverted to the illegal market, where they get into the hands of family, friends, associates, street drug dealers, and so on? Again, we don't have perfect data on that front either. There was a very comprehensive study of ATF trafficking investigation, gun trafficking investigations, that indicated that shady gun dealers were one of the most important conduits to the diversion of guns into the illicit market. Straw purchasers, either individuals who purchase guns on behalf of someone else, are another important way in which a gun gets diverted into the criminal market. Of course, those two aren't mutually exclusive. The gun dealers and the straw purchasers. And then there are also unlicensed dealers. These are the kind, I don't know if many of you have, there have been a variety of news magazine shows that focus on gun show sales and some of the shenanigans that go on there. But many of the people who have the signs that say no background check and they have their assault weapons of the type that Josh was showing us, these are in some ways, probably really unlicensed dealers, because they really should be required to have a license, because they truly do sort of are in it for the livelihood. They're out there week in, week out selling guns and probably making a fair amount of money. So ATF trace data. So first of all, let me just say what is ATF trace data? This is simply when a gun is recovered by law enforcement from a crime scene, from a criminal, for example. The ATF can use information about the make, model, caliber, and serial number to go through the chain from manufacturer to wholesaler to retailer to find out who sold the gun, when, to whom. What we see from ATF trace data is that 70% of the time, the gun came from some retail source within the same state that it was used in crime or recovered in a crime scene. 30%, it came from a different state. But as you might expect, there are really gross differences across states. So these data come from data that we obtained from Mayors Against Illegal Guns. They did a report on this. And then we supplemented it with some more data for guns going to Mexico. So you'll see gross differences. Mississippi tops the list with 50.4 guns per 100 population that get exported in a given year. And then you see in the bottom of the list, you see New York, 2.6. So big differences. I was trying to figure out, okay, what might explain this discrepancy, and I think it has something to do with the NCAA Athletic Conference. I see many SEC schools represented here. Just a hypothesis. So why should we care where the gun comes from? You know, it's a gun. Who cares? If you got it locally or came from someplace else. I actually think it's very important because it tells us something about the relative ease at which you criminals can obtain guns. If it the common belief is that, oh, it's so easy to get a gun. Washington D.C. has strict gun laws. Let's just walk down the street now and see. I'm sure within a few minutes we'll be able to get a gun. Well, it's not really the truth. It kind of sounds good, but it's actually not the truth. And if you have to get your guns from an out-of-state source, it tells you something that locally there's a scarcity, and you're going to have to pay more, and it's going to be a little more complicated to get. So for some states that have gone to great lengths to have very responsible, comprehensive gun laws that hold gun sellers accountable for who they sell their gun to and how they sell their guns, they are hit very hard by guns coming from other states that don't put in those measures. New Jersey, for example, 75% of the guns used in crime in New Jersey come from out of state, 66% for New York, 61% for Massachusetts. And I think when we start to look at the analysis I'm going to share with you and look at how exporting crime guns is associated with what laws you have in place to regulate the sale of firearms, it might tell us what might be important, most important, to address problems, big problems that we have with our federal gun laws. Before I'll share with you the most current data, about a year and a half ago, my colleagues and I published an article in the Journal of Urban Health where we looked at, in a somewhat similar type of analysis, there are differences. We were able to get gun level type of data. Now we only have things aggregated at the state level. But we looked at 54 cities in the United States, looked at the gun laws in place there. And there we were interested in intrastate trafficking, how easily and quickly guns went from a retail sale to a criminal, and how those might have been associated with gun laws. What we found is, in the first set of analyses, we found that having very strong dealer regulations at the state level, and this is the first study to actually incorporate enforcement data of, that they were actually enforcing and doing oversight of gun dealers, we saw a very strong deterrent effect of those measures. We also, not surprisingly, found that when private sellers' sales were regulated, so that there had to be background check for private sales as well as from the dealers, that also deterred intrastate trafficking, as well as discretionary permit to purchase laws. These are the type of laws in places like New York City where the law enforcement issue permits using some degree of discretion. Because those discretionary permit laws are very strongly correlated with gun ownership, we find that when we use a measure of gun ownership in the models, that those that the effects of the laws were no longer significant. But the other two types of laws, again, the way we talk about this typically is measures to hold gun sellers accountable, whether they're retailers who have the ability to pump a whole lot of guns into the illicit market or private sellers. So now we're getting into the new study. In September 2010, Mayors Against Illegal Guns published a report called Trace the Guns that looked at intrastate trafficking. And they basically looked at a set of bivariate comparisons of exporting crime guns, whether you had or didn't have any of these laws. They looked at penalties for straw purchasing, penalties for falsifying purchaser information for a background check or not doing background checks, whether there were background checks for all handgun sales at gun shows, purchase permits for handgun sales, discretionary permit systems, gun prohibitions for violent misdemeanors, and requiring people, when they have a gun that's lost or stolen, to report it to the police, as well as whether local areas can regulate their own firearms. Basically, in all of these bivariate associations, they found a significant difference, that when you had these types of measures, you had less exporting of crime guns. Well, this was very interesting, but, you know, some academic researchers actually had something published very recently in AJPH criticizing this study to say it's very simplistic. It's just a cross-sectional study with some bivariate things, and there's a lot of other things that might explain this. So basically what we tried to do is take these data and do a little more rigorous analysis. So we looked at data from 2009 for the ATF gun trace reports that they have on their website, as well as the guns going to Mexico. And our interest was, again, a set of state gun laws. We didn't use the same exact set of laws. We had some others that we were interested in. And we wanted to control for things in the analysis, like gun ownership levels, how close you were to other states that had stricter laws that might sort of be a magnet for your guns from your state, whether you bordered Canada or not, because Canada doesn't have the same kind of demand for guns as some of our states in Mexico. Interestingly, when a criminologist named Gary Kleck has been critical of some of the trace data, the research using trace data, and he said in a study that we published about 9 years ago that the reason New York City had so many guns from other states is because people from the South were moving to New York City and having their guns stolen soon thereafter. That was interesting. So to placate Gary Kleck, we put in the out-migration from these states. And we used negative binomial regression models. So these are states, these are the laws that we looked at, discretionary permit to purchase. In the right-hand column, you see the number of states with the laws. These are the ones of greatest interest, non-discretionary permit to purchase, background checks for private sales, substantive dealer licensing. We did not have enforcement data, unfortunately, for this study, but we simply coded this if the state required a license and allowed for inspections of those dealers, and there were some penalties available. Also, whether the state had mandatory theft and loss reporting for gun owners, and penalties for failing to conduct background checks, junk gun bans, either the small concealable guns, usually very poorly made, assault weapon bans, and one gun per customer per month. So those are the laws that we looked at, and here are our findings. The second column there is the incident rate ratio, and the in red are statistically significant estimates. And of course, I'm sure you know that any estimate that is below one means that there's a negative association. There are fewer guns exported per capita after you control for all the things that I just mentioned. So the strongest relationship, not surprising to me, was discretionary permit to purchase laws, and this is even after controlling for gun ownership levels. The other strong associations that deterred exporting of crime guns were background checks for private sales, mandatory theft and loss reporting for gun owners, penalties for false find information on gun background checks, and junk gun bans. The assault weapons ban variable was too collinear with some of the other laws, and it was dropped from the analysis. Interestingly, the one gun a month, which was a measure really designed to address this particular issue of interstate trafficking, we found absolutely no relationship with crime gun exporting after you control for these other measures. I wanted to look very specifically also at the border states for Mexico, since this is a topic of great concern, as indicated by Rosanna's comments and Josh's as well. So the columns there are Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and California, and the gun sales regulations that they do or don't have in place. And you see, California is kind of the outlier there. Even though there's a lot of population of Californians, near the Mexico border. Very low rate of exporting guns to Mexico. It's my guess is it has something to do with the measures that had little X's in the boxes. Limitations. What I failed to put on here, I realized after I already hit the send button to submit it to APHA, was this is a cross-sectional analysis, and so ideally you would want longitudinal analysis. We don't have necessarily the greatest longitudinal data of this type in order to do that. But trace data, not all crime guns are traced, are recovered, submitted for tracing, or successfully traced. Not all guns recovered in a different state were actually trafficked. Maybe some of them do move with people when they move. It is aggregated data. Prevent assessment of trafficking, looking at certain kind of trafficking indicators. And there are some gun laws we didn't examine, so maybe we're missing something. And I suspect enforcement is important. We didn't have the data to do that. Conclusions, state laws which enhance accountability of gun sellers appear to deter export of guns. These findings are very consistent with prior research that we've done, some of it cross-sectional, but actually some of it longitudinal for certain cities. And one gun per customer per month, restrictions don't appear to deter traffic.